Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Thank you very much, Big Daddy. Well, today we have Lori Stanley Roveld, if I said that correctly. She'll correct me in a minute. Her book is Running from a Crazy Man. Tomorrow we have Forcia Ross. Then we have Thursday, Helping Hands Press Thursday, Thursday simulcast. On Friday, we're going to have George Taylor, narration by George and Sandra Allen Lovelace. Let's get into it with Lori. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm great. How are you, Giovanni?
All right. How bad did I do the last name? Did I do the last name?
You did it just fine. Lori Stanley Roveld. That's it.
All right. Now your book is called, it's a nonfiction book, Running from a Crazy Man. Who is this crazy person you're running from, and how fast are you? Has he caught you?
There you go. It's called Running from a Crazy Man and Other Adventures Traveling with Jesus. And the title comes from the first chapter, which is based on the whole adventure that David had when he was really sure he was heading for the throne. And I'm sure David thought he had a straight arrow path to the throne and was caught off guard by the fact that suddenly he was spending weeks and months and years running from a crazy king. So my book's about those times in life when, you know, we thought that we were headed on a straight path that was determined by God, and we ended up in a detour. I think that God is with us, whether we're in caves or being crowned king, and that's what the title comes from, that God was with David when he was running from a crazy king, and he's with us in all of our crazy adventures, too.
That's nice. How did you decide how to do this? Was this something you had to really outline, or did you have most of it in your head and thus was more of an organic write? How did you go about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I started doing a blog because back in 2008, every Christian writer was hearing that they needed to do a blog in order to have a platform. People like to have, like, you have a great platform because you have a radio show, so you talk to people. But a lot of writers don't have a platform. So I started blogging to do that and discovered that I absolutely loved blogging. I could use my own quirky, weird voice to talk about what I cared about in the church. And it turned out there were other quirky, weird Christians out there who liked what I was saying. So, or sometimes didn't, but they still appreciated that I said it. So Running from a Crazy Man is a collection of the most popular blog posts from back then. I worked up a number of posts that all sort of had around a similar theme of enduring through trial. I think that in the 70s and back then, Jesus was about making your life better. Jesus would come into your life and your life would be better. And a lot of people set out believing that would happen. So when you have Jesus in your life and things don't get better, things get, in fact, horribly worse. A lot of times people pull off to the side of the narrow road, kind of catch their breath and wonder what they're doing. So I pulled together a bunch of posts that are about those times when you're sitting there gasping, kind of going, I don't get it. I thought I was on the right path. So that, you know, each of the chapters has kind of my crazy titles, but underneath they have things like following Jesus when you're stressed, following Jesus when there's depression, following Jesus when you love an addict, that kind of thing.
It's pretty neat. During the 70s, it was kind of hard to, there were quite a few people that dressed like Jesus. It's kind of hard to separate real from fantasy, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, just the hairstyles, the beards, some people with the flowing robes, sandals, hippy-dippy stuff, as George Carlin used to say. So, interesting.
Well, back then, it was like Jesus was sort of a choice. Like, you know, we had Coke or Pepsi, and you could have Hinduism or Jesus, you know, whatever would enrich your life. And Jesus isn't really a life enrichment tool, although that's kind of how he was sold for a couple of decades. The early church didn't see coming to Jesus as a life improvement tool because they knew that it meant that their lives would be in jeopardy all the time. So there's a lot of better reasons to come to Jesus than the life enrichment course. It can happen. He does make your life better. It's just not the better that you think it's going to be.
How have people received the work? Are you getting some feedback from folks?
I am. I've had a lot of great reviews from people. I've heard readers reach out to me and let me know that they appreciate sort of the humor that I use, but also, it's not, there's a forewarning in my book. My book actually doesn't have a foreword. It has a forewarned by James L. Rubart. He's the best-selling author of Rooms. He's a follower of my blog, and when I asked him to write the foreword, he put a warning in it for people that it's not for Christians who are looking for tickled ears and cotton candy faith. So I got so much feedback that people said, you had me laughing, and then suddenly you had me realizing something that I needed to do with my life. And so there were so many warnings that we just decided to embrace that and put a forewarned on the book. So there's always mixed reaction. People like the humor, people like what I have to say, but there's always an ouch factor at the end of some of my posts, because it's my chapters are written for people who are longtime Christians, and that's me. I need a kick in the pants every once in a while. I need to not just settle in and get comfy with God. I need some challenge, and so there's some challenge in the book. And so there's some good feedback. It just won this past week. It just received the Director's Choice Award at the Blue Ridge Mountain Christian Writers Contest Conference. Alton Gansky decides that award. He's an author of about 43 books, and I have a lot of respect for him. So it meant a lot to receive that award this weekend.
That's pretty neat. How did you decide how far to go with your kick in the pants? A lot of folks sometimes. Did you reach a point where you thought perhaps you're crossing a line, or you're comfortable with the material that you had?
I always feel like I'm, if I don't feel like, I know this is probably not great radio talk, but if I don't feel like throwing up before I push publish on my blog posts, I wonder if I'm really being completely as transparent as I need to be, or as biblical as I need to be. But none of my posts come from a place of me knowing it all. I don't write from a place of, here, I've got things figured out, and now I need to straighten up all the rest of you people. My blog posts and the book all come out of the times in my life when God's kicked me in the pants, always in a loving way, always in a way that's very secure. Jesus loves me, and he's never going to kick me out of the family. But I'm a hobbit. I really relate to the hobbits in Lord of the Rings. I like to be comfortable. I like my meals on time, and adventures like loving my neighbor or forgiving people, they make me late for dinner. So I like to avoid them as possible. But when I, when Jesus calls me into a new adventure, then I realize, oh, wait a minute, there is a part of me that kind of likes this too. I just always need that shove off the couch. So when I'm writing, I'm writing from a perspective of someone who just got kicked off the couch themselves. I'm not writing from someone who's got it all together or who's got it figured out. So I think that's where, a lot of the reviews that I've received on Amazon say that it's like sitting across from someone in a coffee shop having a really great conversation over coffee. So those mean a lot to me, because that's what I wanted to be. I just wanted to be another Christian, another hobbit who's trying to figure this out and having a conversation with people.
Interesting. Now, when you mentioned before you picked blog posts, your most popular blog posts, was that based upon a number of comments you received on those blog posts, or a number of views? How did you go about that?
Yeah, so I looked at comments, the kind of things that people were, if people take the time to make a comment, that you've touched something. Number of hits that they received and views. Also, sort of search topics. One of my most searched blog titles is, I have a chapter title called Church Bullies, and that's one of the most searched things on the web that gets people to my website, which is a sad fact. But, I paid attention to what people are hungry for, what people are looking for when they're searching the internet. and then chose the post at the time that I felt were getting the biggest response. You know, since then, I've had a couple of blog posts receive over 1 million views. I hadn't had that happen before I got the book contract. Those were on another one of my favorite themes is sort of helping people process the headlines. And so a couple of blog posts that have gone viral in the last year have been related to persecution and the actions of ISIS and me trying to process that as a Western American believer sitting here safe. You know, how did these things change my life? So that's another theme that I explore on the blog, but haven't touched on that in the book.
Interesting. Can you tell folks where they can find your blog and also the rest of your social media?
Absolutely. I have everything located at one website. It's www.lori, L-O-R-I, Roeleveld, R-O-E-L-E, V as in Victor, E-L-D.com. So it's my name, LoriRoeleveld.com. And everything is there. You find links to my blog is there. The links for my book are there. You can find me on my YouTube videos, my Pinterest, my Facebook. I'm all over the internet now, whether that's a good thing or not, but I'm out there. So there
interesting.
All, you can find it all
how have your YouTube videos helped you? Do you get a lot of feedback off of them? Do you think that helps drive your sales?
I don't know how much that, you know, I've just started experimenting with them, and what I've done is taken some of my blog posts and just found a very short snippet that I could speak and videotape that and put it on YouTube. I've gotten some good feedback from those because a lot of people are busy, so it's something that they can, if they think that the topic that I'm talking about is interesting to them, they might be cooking dinner at the time. They can click on the YouTube and hear me talk about it rather than try to read it while they're cooking dinner. So, you know, I think that has been helpful. I have an interview on there that I did with Al Gansky where we talk a lot about using humor in Christian writing and how it's kind of an underused thing for Christians. And so that's been getting a lot of feedback too, that that's on the YouTube.
That sounds pretty cool. What do you do for fun? What do you do to chill out, recharge?
What do I do for fun? I love movies. I don't get to go out to them too often, so I'm always seeing them about 6 or 8 months behind everybody else. I have a day job, and I do this writing thing in the margins of the rest of my life. So I love movies. I love sitting out on my porch. I'm a pretty sedentary person, which isn't, you know, something I recommend to people, but I like to sit on the porch and watch my dogs. I've got my kids have dogs. They're one of them has just launched into the world, and the second one's about to launch, and she'll probably take her dog too. So we'll be looking for another dog soon. So that's something I do for fun.
Nice.
I binge
watch
television sometimes too. Old Blue Bloods is something I'm binge watching at the moment.
I haven't watched that one. I'm really bummed. All my shows are done right now. I got to try to find something on Netflix or on demand or something. Yeah, it's depressing as all get out. What kind of movies do you usually watch?
I have very eclectic tastes. I like a lot of different things. I love superhero movies. I love Avengers. I've got to get, you know, I was hoping to get out to see the new Avengers movie this weekend, but didn't get to do it, so I love things like the Avengers, but I love action flicks and like sort of big epic movies, obviously Lord of the Rings and those kind of things. But I like Matrix, you know, big action, sci-fi, fantasy adventures. But I have a daughter who's 22, so I've also done my time with a lot of romantic comedies and liked those as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what do you have on the horizon? Do you have any projects in the pipe?
Right now, I have a book in the works. It's a talk that I do for churches called Jesus and the Beanstalk. And it's a way to motivate people to look at 2 Peter 1, talks about sort of these 8 boring beans of our faith, I call them, these 8 qualities that Peter promises if we have them in increasing measure will be they'll prevent us from being ineffective and unfruitful. but you know, nobody wants to spend a lot of time with them because they're boring. It's like self-control and steadfastness and virtue. In modern times, those sound, you know, very unexciting. When other spiritual forces out there are saying, "Come do fire walking with us." You know, who wants to go out and spend a lot of time developing self-control? But that's because, as I say in the talk, we tend to look at our faith the way the world does, as though we've traded in a valuable cow for worthless beans. And yet, if we remembered the power of these beans and we really enacted them in our lives, we'd all become giant killers. So that's a talk I do for churches, and I've developed it into a book that I'm hoping will get picked up soon. So that's my next favorite. You can tell I like fantasy, and I believe in using story and imagination to help us to incorporate God's truths into our daily lives.
Interesting. Have you ever considered doing any type of fiction at all?
I have. I have actually written 4 novels that have received awards but haven't found publishers. So, I do love writing fiction. I have a fantasy novel that I'm working on that I'm hoping will be something of interest to people in the future. And it's about a clan who's a very warring clan, and they're cursed by their enemies, so that when they go to war, their wounds show up on the woman they love instead of on the warriors. And so it's a lot about the person who cursed them thought that it would make them give up war. Instead, they just decided to value scarred women over women who are flawless. So it's a big discussion about how the choices we make affect the people that we love, and how does that affect the choices that we make, and what does it mean to love warfare and love beauty. And so that's where I kind of go to escape when I need a break from my nonfiction world.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty cool. Is there, you're out and about a bit, it seems. Is there a question maybe I haven't asked you today you're hoping I would, or one maybe in your book signing travels or social media travels that someone hasn't asked you that you've always hoped they would?
Well, one question that I do get asked a lot, my tagline is Disturber of Hobbits, and for some people that's a little off-putting. Other people kind of get it right away. But I know that for some people they go, "What are hobbits and why do you want to disturb them?" But that's sort of the whole idea that I want to encourage believers, especially Christians who've been walking with the Lord for a long time. You know, my base audience are people who love the Lord and who know the Bible, they know how to apply it to their lives, but we've been going with the Lord for so long that we can kind of get on cruise control and think that we can drift into our twilight years without too much challenge. And the Disturber of Hobbits is about unsettling all of us to go, you know what, maybe we're not done. Maybe, you know, into our 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, there's still challenge and adventure with God. So that's where Disturber of Hobbits comes from. And I try to be a little unsettling in my posts, but also use humor to kind of open up and disarm the reader, not in a way to take them hostage to my worldview. It's not a hostile takeover disarming, but more like a peace talks where people come in and feel so comfortable that they're willing to sort of lay down their preconceived notions for a moment and consider the angle that I'm showing to look at something.
That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
Well, I want to thank you for being on today. It's been a real pleasure. And
thank you.
You're welcome back anytime.
I appreciate that, Gio, so much.
Total pleasure. I want to thank you for being on. Everybody, Laurie Stanley Roloveld, author of Running From a Crazy Man. Take a look at her Amazon author page and see everything she has there. Plus, you can find her Twitter feed there. I know I followed you today, which is pretty cool. So please check her out. I hope everybody has a nice day. What we're going to do is we're going to play an audio sample from Joseph Max Lewis's Declaration of Independence series, and we'll be on tomorrow again with Forcia Ross at 11 a.m. Laurie, thanks a lot for being on with me today.
Thank you, Gio. Enjoy your show.
Total pleasure. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Helping Hands Press and narration by George ask the question posed by the Declaration of Independence series. Would you have signed? The Declaration of Independence series asks all of us that one soul-searching question. If you were rich, if signing meant defying the world's superpower, if failure meant your family would be left destitute and you would be hung by the neck with your hands tied behind your back until you strangled to death, would you have signed the Declaration of Independence? Would you have risked your privileged life so that others might live in freedom? That was the question facing John Hancock in Volume 4 of this series by Joseph Max Lewis, and in the face of overwhelming odds, he answered, yes. We must all hang together, Hancock said, before almost choking on his disastrous choice of words. Men's faces clouded. They realized they stood on the brink, but could still step back. As had so often been the case, it was Benjamin Franklin who saved him, who saved us all. Yes, we must indeed all hang together, Franklin replied in an equally loud voice. He took a moment to push his spectacles up his nose. Or most assuredly we shall hang separately. The hall burst into surprised laughter. Men now smiled, grimly perhaps, but they lined up and took their turn, signing the most important document in the history of the world. Only Franklin, Hancock thought to himself. Join Hancock, Franklin, Jefferson, and the other founders on one of the most momentous days in human history, July 4th, 1776. Ladies, my apologies, I said, first kissing Dolly's cheek, then brushing Mrs. Yard's hand with my lips. Once seated, I looked around. The table is well set with a matching collection of bone-colored porcelain plates, cups, and saucers, all overlaid with hand-painted wild flowers. Today calls for a bit of extra caution. I placed one napkin on my lap and tucked a second into the front of my collar. Dolly raised a disapproving eyebrow. I'm afraid breakfast stains won't do on a day like today, I said. And that is all Mrs. Yard requires.
The entire city is abuzz, Mr. Hancock. Mr. Lee merely states the obvious, does he not? The Congress voted for independence 2 days ago, so why is there not a declaration? What explanation can one give for the recalcitrance of some members, and will it be resolved today?
Philadelphia was, of course, abuzz with the dramatic developments. Delaware's delegates deadlocked until Caesar Rodney arrived to break the tie. When Rodney heard of the impasse, though on his sick bed, dying of cancer, he arose, took to his horse, and rode from Delaware to Philadelphia, through the night, in a blistering rainstorm. Somehow, the man managed to stay on his horse and arrive late in the morning, in time to cast the deciding vote of approval that passed the resolution. Mrs. Yard, you know well it was not a few members, I said. Because, my good woman, I thought, the entire endeavor hangs by a thread, something I will certainly keep to myself. At the end of June, Richard Henry Lee of Virginia proposed a resolution for the Congress to adopt. Resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Once it was clear that the motion would not carry unanimously, Samuel and I maneuvered to postpone the vote on the resolution. Originally, I said after a moment, we split 7 colonies to 5 on the motion, and therefore postponed the vote. Who knows what the outcome may have been if we forced the issue, my good woman, and agreed to consider the resolution on July 1, and voted for independence on July 2, if the Pennsylvania Evening Post and the Pennsylvania Gazette are to be believed, Yard replied.
then some continue their endless bickering and nitpicking. Eggs Benedict, Mr. Hancock. Yes, quite. Right here, if you please. The eggs at least provided a temporary distraction. Mrs. Yard had a point, so I took a moment to gather my thoughts. Yard's house is popular, and thus she is a woman of some influence. How should I respond? We reopened consideration on Lee's resolution on July 1 and haggled until the vote for independence on July 2. But a vote and an actual declaration, something that will be sent to the king of the most powerful empire on earth, is an irrevocable act. Two quite different matters. I managed to work out a compromise with the members on the composition of the drafting committee and appointed Jefferson, Franklin, Adams, Sherman, and Livingston to draw up the Declaration of Independence. In reality, Jefferson will do the writing, but everyone is satisfied their interests will be protected. I chose the others, some under duress, to satisfy the demands of various political factions. In any event, Jefferson's pen has soared. Last night I read the draft declaration, but it is the preamble that both stirs the soul and threatens disaster. All men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mr. Hancock! Oh, forgive me, Mrs. Yard, the eggs are wonderful. My compliments yet again to the house you keep here. My pleasure, sir, Yard replied. But I hope you will forgive me if I take advantage of the fact that the President of the Congress is here, in my house, at my table, to inquire as to the future of my country. The concerns of a patriot deserve a clear answer, ma'am. I took my time with the last of the eggs. I pushed away my plate and gestured to Philip for my carriage. I hope we will see some significant progress today. The drafting committee, as you have no doubt heard, has been hard at work. I believe it will produce a document that all of us can embrace. Now, you must excuse me, I said, dropping the napkins onto my plate. I'm to open the session at 9 a.m., I hope to see you this evening for dinner, but events may prevent that. I kissed Dolly on the cheek, bowed to the formidable Mrs. Yard, and joined Philip in the hallway. Join this country's founding fathers as they ponder the question, to sign or not to sign, in the Declaration of Independence series, Volume 4, John Hancock, by Joseph Max Lewis. It's from Helping Hands Press. And narration by George.com.